this is John Curtis, and you're listening to the Beat Blue Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by former Chelsea and Crystal Palace midfielder Damien Matthew. How are you doing this evening, Damien?
Hi, I'm very good, Chris, very good.
Yeah, so I thought we'll start with, how did you get spotted by Chelsea?
I mean, just like most young lads in terms of taking your grassroots football for your local team and progress to the school and district and county, and then so it was like sort of county, really, like playing for Kent.
Yeah.
The scouts sort of watched you play, and then had the chance to go to Chelsea. So yeah, they were, at the time, wasn't my team, but as soon as I went there, the young 14-year-old, I quickly became a fan and loved them for many years.
Right, do you remember your first day in the academy?
Good question. You know, I remember travelling up to Battersea Park. Yeah, and it was on red cinder. So I'm not that old. I'm only 46, but it was before Ashton Turf, so it was an interesting surface. But I mean, as always, when you're at that age, everything was geared around technique, and I felt that the coaching was always very advanced, if that makes sense. You know, everyone wanted to work on good technique off of both feet, and it was a great environment to be at Chelsea.
So how did you find out you were going to be signed as a professional?
I mean, the progression, you went from like schoolboy to scholar. It was YTS in them days, and £27.50, and then your mum and dad got £25 a week as well, expenses. So so it was great times, because it wasn't, you definitely weren't playing for money. It was definitely the prestige of being at a great club, being having an opportunity to work hard and develop and get better, and ultimately the goal of being a professional at the end of your second year as an under 18. So I mean, lucky enough for me, I was youth team player and captain of the youth team, and so you always felt you was on the right pathway. But then to get told you were going to get a professional contract was a really pleasing thing, and that was around
the time of
1987, 89 at your time.
And do you remember making your debut?
Yeah, I remember making my debut. I mean, it's funny because I spoke to a good friend of mine today, Graham Stewart. We both come up the ranks together, and we both made our debuts together as well. So that was like, it was great. We played Crystal Palace, and they were going for a cup final, so they were delighted with that. Because they had a man sent off after about 20-odd minutes.
Yeah.
It made for a very good debut. Yeah, we won 3-0.
So you're around at the start of the Premier League in 92.
Yes.
From a playing from a playing perspective, was it any different, or did it feel special?
I think there was just more coverage. You know, I mean, it's gone to another level now, hasn't it? You know, with the way the games are televised, and you know, because it was a luxury, wasn't it? Not a luxury. Well, it was a luxury. Sorry, the big match, wasn't it, on a Sunday? So, so to go to names on the back of your shirts and obviously a little bit of the razzmatazz of the early Premier League had in 1992. It was just a great feeling, because it was just great to get the coverage, I felt, and make the game even more professional than it was.
Yeah. So could you imagine at the time the monster Chelsea have turned into these days?
No, I mean, never. No, you know, I mean, it's for me, it's always been dear to my heart at the club, because if you go to a place and you work yourself through from schoolboy to apprentice to professional, it's always going to have a big influence on your life. I mean, I was there for 10 years, so it was a big part of my life, and you know, but you would never envisage, and you can look at, I think, quite a few teams in the Premier League that have come from sort of humble sort of upbringings to mega, and not only just be big in England, but to be big clubs in the world, which, you know, Chelsea now, they've won the Champions League, you consider them to be one of the best clubs in the world, and you know, and obviously financially they are, and looking to improve their stadium and so forth. So you can never see it, and even now at times you think, will it stay? Is that as big as the Premier League's going to get? And it's got even bigger, hasn't it?
Yeah. So you moved to Crystal Palace. What prompted the move?
I mean, it was interesting, because as a young 19, 20 year old, I'd played for the first team. I'd been in England 21. Then I'd had an injury that sort of got misdiagnosed, and before the injury I'd been offered a very good contract. Glenn Hoddle came in, and I got offered another contract, and it wasn't a regret, but when I do look back on my career, you sort of say, well, maybe if I'd chosen to stay, things could have been different, because Glenn came in and he was a brilliant coach, and he was just emerging as a good manager, and it was just a time where I felt there was a lot of midfield play. I wanted to be playing, I was so desperate to be playing, maybe a bit of impatience, but I was desperate to play, and just thought that when the Palace situation came, they were top of the Championship, really great guy in Alan Smith, a really good squad that he was building, a very young squad with the likes of Chris Coleman, Gareth Southgate, Chris Armstrong, who went on to Tottenham and done very well. So it was just, I felt, a good opportunity for me to go and play. And every player will tell you it's great to be wanted at that time and to want to play, basically.
So in the 90s, did it feel like much of a step down from going from the Premier League level to Division 1 Championship level?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the quality of the football, I mean, as I alluded to there, I mean, you look at the players, Chris Coleman, Southgate, they went on to the Premier League, so there was good players there. So I think, obviously, the level of the clubs, you didn't have the fan base that some clubs would have in the Premier League, but as we spoke earlier, the Premier League was only emerging, so you still had some very big clubs in the Championship, and because I joined in the February and we got promoted in the May, it was straight away, and every game was a big game because we were top of the table. And I remember going to Notts Forest and lucky enough to score one of the games. My only goal, actually, now I scored at Notts Forest, and there was 20 odd thousand there, and that was a big game because it was Palace v Notts Forest, but both of us were going for promotion. So there were still big games in that time. And no, it didn't. At that time, you didn't, as a player, you just wanted to play and be with good people and good players, which I was.
Yeah. Do you surprised that? I always thought Chris Armstrong was a really good player. I'm surprised he never gone to play for England. I mean, he got called up a couple of times. Are you surprised he didn't have a better career in the end?
No, totally. He had really good pace, and then I know he had a few sort of injuries, and which might have sort of hit his pace, and so it probably stopped him fulfilling his potential. But in his time at Crystal Palace, and in his early time at Tottenham, he was a phenomenal player. A real sort of electric, very quick player who could finish as well. It happens. It's always the sad thing in football. Even myself, you look at where you started, and I'm not saying I would have been a top Premier League player, but I definitely felt I was good enough to play in the top two divisions for a much longer part of my career.
So then you had spells with Burnley and Northampton before retiring professionally at the age of 19 due to injury. How did you deal with the career ending so abrupt?
Obviously you're really disappointed. I loved the time at Burnley. That was a really good time for me in terms of playing, because I was sort of, I went there in 96, I was like 25, 26, and I played the most games I'd played in my career, sort of close to 70 games in 2 years, and I'd had a stop to my career, so it's really pleasing to play that amount of games. And the only reason I left Burnley was because I was going to have my wife were having our first child, and we wanted to come a bit further down south, and we chose Northampton, which is a progressive club. Burnley was a great club and great people there, and so you, when I do look back, I sort of say, well, I played for Chelsea, I played for Palace, I played for Burnley, so you sort of say, well, they're three really good and big clubs in the main. And then Northampton was ended up being the right move, but the operations dictated that in terms of back and hip operation. But met some really good people at Northampton that you're still in contact now, even Ian Atkins that I see on the circuit, on the scouting circuit. And you're gutted. You are gutted, Chris, that your career's finished. You're 29, and it's the million-dollar question that every player faces, whether you're 29 or 35, 36, when they retire now, is that what do you do next? And I wasn't sure, being blunt, but I'd always enjoyed the football environment. I'd really enjoyed the development environment. I'd always been a team player, because I'd captained a lot of the teams where I'd been. So coaching was a natural pathway, and I've loved it ever since.
Mm. So as you say, since retiring, you've had various different roles with Charlton, Chelsea, Wolves. Are you Celtic now, David?
Yeah, no, Everton now. Everton, a little bit. When I lost my job at Charlton, October 2015, I had a little bit of time out of the game and obviously watching games and stayed fresh, but the chance to work for Celtic, London and South East, and that was only part-time, so that was healthy because it allowed me to watch games and see some good young players in the London and South East area.
Yeah.
But then, and I was aspiring, Celtic understood this, that I was aspiring to get back into the game in a coaching or managing capacity, that one or two opportunities did arise, but it wasn't right. And then I was really pleased when a friend of mine, Jamie Hoyland, went into Everton in a scouting capacity, and he asked me if I'd like to join, and sort of clearly it was Steve Walsh. And yeah, I've been with Everton since October 2016, again London and South East, but it's full time and sort of development phase and first team phase, and I'm absolutely loving it. It's a really, they're great people, great football club, and really enjoying the work at the moment.
So Everton actually signed a Charlton player, teenager today, Luckman. How do you think he's
going to
do it, though?
Yeah, no, he's a really good player. He's a really exciting talent. I mean, obviously, I was well aware of him when, in my time at Charlton, he was sort of playing in the youth team.
Mm.
I love the story because he'd only joined at under 16, so he hadn't had a long history of the academy environment, which is not a good thing, not a bad thing. But what I really liked about him in terms of him as a player was a lot of it was just so natural and instinctive. So he's a real breath of fresh air to watch. He's developed really well in the youth team there under the guidance of Steve Avery, and now he's obviously played plenty of games in the first team, and I just think it's a fantastic move for a young English talent to hopefully fulfil his real potential and be at the top level, and I wish him every success.
So did you think more young players from the Football League clubs will start coming through at Premier League level?
I think so, Chris. You know, I mean, if you're asking me to give my honest opinion of the academy setups, then there's been so much progress made in terms of facilities, in terms of the level of qualification that coaches now have. But the biggest and the most important part of an academy is the development of the players. Mm. And I think there's a wonderful pathway from the age of 9 right the way up. But the biggest hindrance they're finding is an opportunity to play in the first team. Now I understand the stakes are so high, but I mean that's why someone like Pochettino at Tottenham, you just sort of marvel at what he's doing, you know. And a great example for him was they're winning the game against Chelsea. He takes off Dembele and brings on a young English talent in Harry Winks. And I honestly feel that managers, if they are managing English clubs, have a responsibility to the English game as well. And so, I mean, someone like Pochettino, we've seen Alex Ferguson over the years do it as well. That they've just been unbelievably supportive, not only of their club, but also of the national team, which I think is really important. And I mean, and credit must go to these managers for doing that. So if there isn't that pathway in the Premier League, because I understand the managers' predicaments, and it's not everyone's right to do it, but I would like to see it done. But if you can't do it, then these young players have got to say to themselves, well, look, what's a better opportunity for me? So I go to the Championship, Dele Alli down at MK Dons, and you look at what a great player he potentially, how old he is, and could become just by playing that experience in League One. And like we mentioned earlier, I hope someone like Lookman can go and have an equal successful career by doing it that way.
Yeah, so we go back into your early coaching career. How was coaching always the plan?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you're unsure when you're 29 and you've had a good football career or a relatively good football career, and you do ask the questions. You say, is it coaching, or you've got friends who are in the workplace and you've had a good career, but is there something else for you? But once I got on the training pitch and I was working with players at all ages, you know, I have an analogy of like a playground and stadium, and I use that analogy in terms of players, and what I say is that feeling of how you started in the playground and you then go and play in front of 30, 40, 50,000, it's just a great feeling, you know, and it's a great journey. And that's always been the biggest success for me, is that every player just enjoy the journey and love the journey and want to keep learning and keep striving to get better. Because I think when you do that in life, you enjoy things much, much more. So I've just really enjoyed my coaching career, Chris. And whether it's been coaching at grassroots level or under 12s, under 14, 16s, the youth team's a fantastic job, and I'd say it's one of the best jobs you can have in youth development, being a youth team coach. But then also, when you then step into the first team, it's a great excitement of being with good players who are developing, but ultimately playing for 3 points and trophies.
So who are some of the people you feel have been the greatest help on your coaching journey?
Yeah, I mean, as a young player, you know, in terms of what taught me what being a good coach was about. Then I had a very good coach. He was at Chelsea for 27 years. Was a guy called Wim Williams.
Yeah.
He was an ex-teacher as well. And, you know, so I felt that his way of teaching players, it was excellent, you know, because he coached in a very good way, but he also taught in a very good way. So I've always tried to bring that into my coaching style, because obviously my background is being an ex-professional player. So, but it's easy for an ex-player to demonstrate things, but it's much harder to actually put that point across so someone can understand it and learn. So by having good teachers, Gwyn Williams, Ted Dale, I've loved it when I've been on courses. The likes of John Peacock and Dick Bate have always been great. I was lucky enough when I played in the under-21 that I had people like Dave Sexton, Ray Harford, John Ward. They were brilliant coaches. Mm. And then the latter part of my career at Chelsea, Glenn Hoddle. So I've learned, Chris, of so many great people. You know, like when my time at Chelsea, then Crystal Palace, we had Steve Harrison, he's a brilliant coach. Ray Lewington was an excellent coach. And then at Burnley, we had Gordon Cowans, we had Glenn Roeder. So I had some, and as I mentioned earlier, at Northampton, Ian Atkin. So I had some really, really good coaches in my time at Burnley. We had Adrian Heath and Colin Harvey for a little spell. So when I've sat down sometimes, you know, and wrote all about all the coaches I've had,
yeah,
and just put one or two pointers of what I thought were qualities of theirs, and I've tried to use that in my coaching, and it's all been for a good experience.
So do you think your coaching style has evolved over the years then?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely evolved in it, you know, because it's like, I think the saying of you get wiser would be a great...
Yeah.
Develop as a coach, you just realise what works. That means you don't stand still, because the game's always evolving and developing, and we look now, so there's a real fashion for three at the back at the moment, tactically, and that, you know, and it's so again, as coaches, you've got to learn that, okay, maybe this is a great way of playing, and why is it a good way of playing, and how can it make my team successful? Because a lot of teams, we've won up front in the 4-3-3 formation, that, you know, and then a lot of teams now want to try and get two strikers or even three strikers in their team. So this is a way of maybe being able to do that. So so it's been, yeah, the game's always evolving. You, as a coach, you've got to make sure you seek, keep watching, keep learning, and also seek guidance and seek advice from people who can hopefully challenge you.
So do you think that your time as a player has opened doors for you into coaching?
As I alluded to earlier, I always talk about the journey, and I think when you're on that journey, whether it's as a player or as a coach, you sort of meet like-minded people. You also meet people that at times are up in interest rooms where there are people that haven't liked each other, you know, I'm not going to shy away from that, haven't liked each other, but respected each other. And I think that's a really important element in the game, that, you know, I've worked with coaches and managers that I wouldn't say we've been the best of friends, but we've respected each other because we've worked together, we've challenged each other, and we've had success. So again, it's not always rosy, and not everything is perfect, and I think that's something as a coach you learn. Sometimes you want everything to go right. It's not the perfect session. You then work at it again, adapt it, evaluate it, and then you move forward and progress it.
So you've worked at, as you've mentioned, you've worked at most levels as a coach. And do you feel there's the opportunities for English coaches these days?
I think there's lots of opportunities, that, you know, but I think the final barrier that we've got to break down, and a good example is even today, you know, where Mike Phelan loses his job at Hull, and the farm manager comes in, which again, good pedigree, good experience, but you'd like that to be a British or English manager, that, you know, but for whatever reason, Swansea decided to go to put Paul Clement, a British English manager. That's great. Hull decided to go another way. So again, you know, we alluded to it earlier, when people have choices to make, and that's fine, but I just feel that, again, similar to what we said about Pochettino and with young English players, I do think the clubs have got a responsibility to give British English coaches, managers an opportunity, you know, and by that, we're as good as any coach manager in the world. We've just got to be given the opportunity and shown that we can do it. And okay, at the moment people say, yeah, but we haven't got the managers managing at the top teams. But again, that's opportunity. Quality of Eddie Howe, Sean Dyche, who I personally know, again, really pleased. Gareth Southgate's got the England job. these are really, really good people, but also really good managers now, and even potentially top managers in the future, given the time.
Yeah, I recently read an interview with Frank Lampard where he discussed that he thinks that they should fast-track top players into coaching. Do you think a quicker system for top English talents would be good for the game?
Totally right. I do, and, and anyone who questions that, I feel needs to just, again, step back what we said earlier, look at what they've achieved, look at how they've achieved them, look at where they've come from. I mean, Frank's a great example of a player who people could say, yeah, he was the son of Frank Lampard Senior, he's the nephew of Harry Redknapp, so he's had opportunities given to him. I don't agree with that. I look at Frank Lampard and say, you look at where he came from in terms of West Ham and how he worked so hard for his game, how he developed his game, and I'll be the first to admit, he came to Chelsea for a lot of money at the time, and people were sort of questioning the fee, but once you saw Frank and his attitude and how he played, you could only but sort of admire what a good player he was, and it's come out a lot, but also what a good person he is as well, and how he wanted to get better, but not only get better for himself, but the way he would help younger players, how he sort of helped staff. So I've got the utmost respect for players like that, and I genuinely believe when they've given that type of service, and also not just on the pitch, but the service I just mentioned off the pitch, we definitely need to make sure we get the best talent that we've had and try and work out how they can help our fellow sort of young players, but also senior players as well.
All right, so before we finish, do you want to plug your Twitter or any websites you're involved with?
My ones, but you know, I'd appreciate that, and I mean, there's one APD as well, and you know, which is a local grassroots one, and you know, which is that's a fantastic piece of a bit of work in the South London area. So I'm very positive, Chris.
Okay, I'll put all the links in the description below this article. So yeah, I've really enjoyed speaking to you today, and I'd love to just be on again in the future. So.
No problem. And feel free, give us a bell anytime, and you know, if you just want to sort of general catch up as well, and you know. And,